This is Anne DeVore, Out of the Rose, Initiation, Revelation, and Art, 20th of June, 1992, Tape 2 of 2.
Clearer about the instructions, or ask a question about your work. Or ask for an image that wants to be brought back into this world. A metaphor for poetry. Or one line to be added to a work in progress. Or the colors for a painting. Or the lyrics for a song you're writing, or new ingredients for something you're cooking, anything you like. Is there something you'd like to see? Or a friend you'd like to check in on? Do what you want. And take leave of your friend and return with whatever you are able. And I'll show you what it feels like to have all the roses joined. Just focus on the rose in your heart. And begin breathing the rose breath and expanding your rose. And stay conscious in your heart. Expand only the edge of the rose body. You're going to make your body grow and grow. And your consciousness stays with you in your heart. And several breaths, keep expanding. And begin to realize that we are one rose, with each of your roses a petal on that rose. And let the beautiful movement of the music or the stars or water cleanse this rose and renew you. And give you new energy. And pay attention to your physical form. Any tension, any pain. Breathe the rose breath into the pain and relax your shoulders and your neck and your back. And prepare for new energy to come in. And as the rose can expand, we can send this rose out as far as we can imagine and send the rose breath out over the city of Seattle, expanded over the state of Washington, begin to imagine that you are going to surround the entire world with rosy breath. And ask that any being or entity or animal or rock or tree who has need of healing can take part in this energy now. And send the rose breath all around the globe. For there is energy enough for all. And bring your bodies back into the room. And move your roses back into your heart. And be as you were. And if you want to write about that or draw something, go ahead. Instead of just be with them, he finally decided at the age of 52, he said, "I have always sought to bring my mind close to the mind of Indian and Japanese poets, of old women in Connacht, mediums in Soho, lay brothers whom I imagine dreaming in some medieval monastery the dreams of their village, learned authors who refer all to antiquity, to immerse it in the general mind, where that mind is scarce separable from what we have begun to call the subconscious, to liberate it from all that comes of councils and committees, from the world as it is seen from universities or from populous towns, and that I might so believe I have murmured evocations and frequented mediums, delighted in all that displayed great problems through sensuous images or exciting phrases, accepting from abstract schools but a few technical words that are so old they seem but broken architraves fallen amid bramble and grass. And I have put myself to school where all things are seen. In Latin it's atenedo tactate per amici silentia lunae, close in touch with the friendly silent moon." He's put himself to school with the moon. At one time, I thought to prove my conclusions by quoting from diaries where I have recorded certain strange events the moment they happened. But now I have changed my mind. I will but say, like the Arab boy that became vizier, O brother, I have taken stock in the desert sand and of the sayings of antiquity. And so, you see, when we want to deal with pure mind, it isn't anything about the mind that gets schooled. It's really about a mind that is beyond that second door. Mind in the knowing sense, or in the heartfelt sense. It's an intelligence, all right, but of its own order. And then when you bring the information back, it has to get translated into our world, and that's that constant frustration we have of not being able to get close to something once in a while. You get the image, and then you can't render it, or you don't know what to do with it, or you don't know how to make it practical. Maybe you just don't for a while. Maybe you just live with it. Let that rose breath grow and live with it. And you can now take any of the things we did today and adapt them. I mean, these are the things that are closest to me, and they're my images. But you can take any of the flowers or animals or trees or sanctuaries or protected spaces. You can take any image you wish for your teacher or guide, any way to contact it. But it is there. And once you've passed through this third door, I mean, I didn't really ask, second door, did anyone not go? Did anyone not go past the second door? Well, into this third initiation. Go ahead, I want to know.
I just said,
Well, we didn't go there today. We just started with the contacting and the communion. But those are the, you know, think about this phase taking 20 years, right? How many years do you think these three steps would take us? And my feeling is we spend a lot of time on number one. I think Yeats spent his entire life on number two, not getting involved, not getting in fights, not getting depressed, not falling in love, not wasting time in political activities that really were detracting from his work. He basically spent from the age of 40 on fighting this. And only when he was about 64 did he really feel ready to write his real poetry. But as far as living by example, I think he did a very good job. His children took over where he left off in creative projects. And in, I mean, you don't know who you're already setting an example for. Well, Michael Yeats is still in politics. He's 67, 68 right now. Ann Yeats is still working in the Kuala Press and has taken over her mother's job of making sure that there's a whole new set of books that just got written by a man named George Harper that are the notes from the medium that they carefully, about 4,000 pages of compiled notes from their sessions that Ann Yates has edited and made available to scholars. So she's taken over what her mother left behind. Always has worked in the press and worked as a publicist. So you could say that they've taken over very responsible jobs that both Yates and their mother had left for them to do. And they've been very, very generous with scholars, people who come to Ireland who want to see the library or use the books in the library are welcome. They are very generous.
Where are they?
I think that Sligo. Sligo. Kuala, I think, is... I don't have one of the books here. I could check for sure. But I think that they are in County Mayo and Sligo. Of the poems. I used this old one that was, that these are the early poems. The later poems, I have to depend on the Macmillan edition. And this has been revised several times, but it's still, you go to the used bookstores, you'll always find the old ones in the used bookstores when a new edition comes out. And then this was one that is a very old book that I was lucky enough to find in a used bookstore. But it's still published, I believe. It's called The Poetical Works of William B. Yeats, and it's two volumes. One is Lyrical Poems, and volume two is the plays. And it was published by Macmillan in 1908. And the words are not much changed. But Yates and the Tribes of Danu.
Wow.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Oh, where did you find that?
Used bookstore. Danu, D-A-N-U. And this is the best source of the rose information. It's got one... Charles Johnston, who was a Sanskrit scholar and a Gaelic scholar. And because Charles Johnston was a Sanskrit scholar, Yeats, from the age of 20, was also interested in Eastern thought, and in particular Hindu thought and the Upanishads. And Charles Johnston actually did one of the best translations of Patanjali's work. And you can get it at Quest Bookstore. Patanjali's Aphorisms, something like that. Yeats's last long work was his own version of the Upanishads, which he did in 1939. It is incredible. And so when you think about him, he's Celtic all right, but he's got a Sufi flavor to him. That's why Charles Johnston was a Gaelic specialist and a Sanskrit specialist. And they prove it by, you know, migrations and the fact that the Celtic world did spread all the way to India. And that why it's now isolated is because of Roman invasion and Viking invasion and the spread of Rome. And that, in fact, the Celtic tribes are now Ireland, Wales, Brittany, and then certain influences that come right down what we call the, from Latvia, Lithuania, then on down into certain parts of India where you still have the fire people, the Zoroastrians.
Did we still go up into the Celtic area?
I think not really. I don't know. But horse people, I mean, look for desert people on horses who live by fire. And so you deal with Zoroastrians, certain aspects of the Sikhs and the Sufis. I mean, it's a very interesting possibility.
You're also going to like to do a lot of root work.
and Gaelic. That is that's accurate. Right. It was an oral tradition. Right. Right. The great warrior traditions are really about spirit warriors. If you read the Bhagavad Gita, it's really about a spirit war that is going on in the mind of a great warrior. And that is an alchemy of sorts. It's the battle of the mind in its play of opposites. So a beautiful little book to get is Mythologies, because that's where the essays are. These are little essays and stories that I think are so lovely. And another, there is a collection just called Essays and Introductions, and that's also, these are more like stories that come in part from a book called The Secret Rose. And I just read. I mean, I read them and I try to think about how they relate to one another. And remember that he is a Gnostic and they're forbidden to write in a straightforward way what they know. They're only able to put it into their poetry. So to put this kind of a structure together, the work that I did last night, I'm sure that a Yeats scholar who is from a university would have a lot of things to say about that, probably not good. But, you know, it's my speculation that what he was trying to do is give a roadmap to us, show us what man really is, hominis, what we're capable of, what it means to be in contact with spirit life. And also remain incarnate, because after all, we're doing our wheel, we're doing our phases. Now, one of the things that I find fascinating about his dance of the sun and the moon is that that is not the dance of the male and the female. It's not the king and the queen exactly. The dance of the sun and the moon in his 28 phases is really about, if you think about the 28 phases, where the full moon is here, and the dark of the moon is here, and the light of the sun is here, and you've got 28 incarnations. This is the dance of it's not the anima mundi, but it's that fire rose, the secret rose, it's like feminine with all the generative power of the universe. And the moon represents a soul in a body incarnate, male or female. So the moon is each of us. But the light that we're returning to is the mother. The feminine. I like that. What a surprise when they get there and it isn't a man. And I really think it's, you like that? All that solar power. And it's been, you know, usurped by the teachings, is the way Yeats would say it. It's like, all those references to the ones who came who stole the light, well, they changed the stories to keep us in darkness. And so a lot of his warnings are, you know, that the light has almost gone out and we've really got to get this thing turned around. You can't. That's right.
Do you know if there is a Rosicrucian? And then from the girls were at group.
Ah.
And when you said that, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can at least get them out and away, and then use... See, that's why when you're trying to get information, you've got to begin to hear which is really louder. Because they're probably, for a while, both going to come in. And we have to start being selective about what we listen to. So it's like a tangled web of cross purposes and checks. It's almost like a chess game.
Yeah.
Yeah. A burden.
Uh-huh.
Well, then what?
Uh-huh.
Well, you know that what Yeats would say about all that is, if you're doing it for anything but passion, you're not doing it for the right reason. Let's see if I can find that little bit of writing. Admit it for a man who takes up pen or chisel to seek originality, for passion is his only business. And he cannot but mold or sing after a new fashion, because no disaster is like another. He is like a phantom in a Japanese play who, compelled to wander side by side and never mingle, cry, "We neither wake nor sleep, and passing our nights in a sorrow which is the end of a vision. What are these scenes of spring to us? If when we have found a mask, we fancy that it will not match our mood till we have touched the gold with gold the cheek, we do it furtively, and only where the oaks of Dodona cast their deepest shadow. For could he see our handiwork, the daemon would fling himself out, now being our enemy." So you can't do the work except for passion. And you have to work within your voice, because if you don't, your own daemon becomes your enemy. If you believe that you're doing, well, money. If you find your mask and then you want to touch it with gold, you've got to do that secretly, because if the daemon catches you doing that, the gold touch, he will fling himself out and become your enemy. So you can't do it to be original. You can't do it to please the public. And you can't do it for money. The only way this voice is going to speak through you is for passion.
Is that because of gold?
Mm-hmm. Well, that will take care of itself, in the sense that when you do it for passion, it's sort of the old saw, if you do what you want, your life will come to you. But if you do art for the wrong reasons, you're going to lose your muse. So, you know, you have to listen to these voices that say, this is important, because that is part of the passion.
My yeah. Passion doesn't mean being true for ourselves?
Oh, absolutely.
I don't want to say
that. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's true. The Irish government audited Yeats, because there was a point in his life that they really could not understand how one could live on so little money. So they audited him to find out what, in fact, was going on here. And it was true, he had no money. And in those days, the Victorians sort of all traveled around and lived in each other's homes, and they lived in hotels, and they lived here, and they lived there. And he spent a lot of time during his 40s at the mercy of his friends until he could get his work started. And one of the reasons I think he did the Senate work is that it gave him a small stipend. I mean, it gave him a bit of an income. So he found a way to earn the money in a different way than to make his poetry pay for it. Well, I think that's a choice we have to make. And, you know, that's what he would call the battle and the balance. It also grounds us in the real world.
But it sounds like that if he were to start making paths just to sell them, he would lose his own vision and
the connection to himself.
So that, I mean, that's what I think.
Yeah, I think there are. I think what this kind of a theory has us examine is that's why I use the word vocation. It's a calling. It's not the career, maybe, and it might not even be your work, which I think of as paying for your livelihood. Or so some of us will have a dual life. Some will be lucky enough to have one avocation, vocation, work, career that is all-encompassing. But the real kind of spiritual commitment you have to make with this is that there are no compromises when you begin accepting this connection to your true self, your true soul. You can't compromise that. I think that's over and over what we learn. And so anytime you're still dealing with obstacles or the critic or trying to make it pay or trying to make it popular or trying to make it original, probably you're going to get blocked. It's the web. It's the you end up in a maze instead of in a traffic circle. And it's a very hard kind of compromise balance between how other people do it and how an initiate would do it. So this is about your own identity as well as spirit and whatever the activity you might call art. And the more things we require of it, I think the harder it is. I mean, I see your dilemma. It's like, because your ideas are important. And so you see how the ante is raised every time you come up with a new idea. You bet.
You what we really love in the room will come.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Just as it doesn't mean you get rich.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And we can support ourselves when we follow what we really love. It's really work. I love that.
Yeah, I love that book. It's one of my favorite books. Monks, ordinary people as monks and mystics. I have a whole shelf of books about monks and mystics, and there was a book that I was really excited about at one point, and One of my clients says, you know, and it's really hard to trust an analyst whose favorite book is Call to the Desert. It's like any moment I'm going to be out there in my hair shirt. Well, we have a friend who's in a movement called Lesser Seattle. Isn't that the name of it? I think of it as Lesser Seattle, Sustainable Seattle. I'd like it to be Lesser. It's a group of people who are meeting to discuss what they want to do and how much they need to live in order to, you know, not only to...
That's called the New Roadmap Foundation.
The New Roadmap Foundation. Volunteered Simplicity, that's the one. Yeah. So she's involved in several movements that are both for the ecology and for quality life. And a lot of the exercises they go through is to really examine just what you need that would be good for the environment or good for your art. Really get clear about it. How much space you need, how much food you need, how much income you need. And in fact, that is what is required in an initiate's life. You look at simplifying your life. You look at what is required of you in life. You look at what the task is asking that you are called to do. And you figure out a way to give time to it. So it's about time, breaking habits of time and place. Really? I was getting ready to join. are they in a community?
There's all different kinds of lifestyles. In one case, there's about 8 or 10 people who bought their house together.
Mm-hmm.
They were living in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually own the house.
Mm-hmm.
They do their work for the community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, next step is to expand and try to blow these limits out. And sometimes we just have to blast them out. And this kind of imagery is helpful. This is called the hosting of the she. The host is riding from Nathnara and over the grave of Cluth Nabera, Kaolti tossing his burning hair, and Neom calling, away, come away. Empty your hearts of its mortal dream. The winds awaken, the leaves whirl round. Our cheeks are pale, our hair is unbound. Our breasts are heaving, our eyes are agleam. Our arms are waving, our lips are apart. And if any gaze on our rushing band, we come between him and the deed of his hand. We come between him and the hope of his heart. The host is rushing twixt night and day, and where is their hope or deed is fair? Kaolti tossing his burning hair, and Neom calling, away, come away. So your job is to get through the door and get on one of these horses of the fairy kingdom. And always go through the same induction. Visualize the circle of trees and the stone circle. And stand in the middle of the stones and let the light, the column of light, encircle you and find the door. And on several breaths, expand your rose. Make it as large as you can. fill it with air, fill it with light. And when you open the door, Keolti will call, come away, come away. And grab onto the manes of those fairy horses. And let's move past all obstacle. Move. And let the water lead you. And if you could have what you truly desire, if your life were the life that you wanted, if your vocation were the one that calls you, let the water carry you there now. If you move this far as an initiate to keep 20 years of focus, hearing and glimpsing, facing all the tests and obstacles, getting past all the critical aspects of your life, and learning to get past them, many of you already know the skill part. I mean, there's a lot of things that have to be done to prepare. And you probably have a good idea of why you haven't done certain things, because it might take a new skill or it might take a change. And those are part of the obstacles. But if you can move into this kind of a circularity where you continually confront this, then there's a third phase. And up until here, you know, we would have called you an initiate, a beginner. And many of us have that sense of beginning and beginning and starting over and beginning and sharpening our pencils and going back and doing this over. And there is a point where you realize you're not doing that so much. And sometimes you're surprised by it. Sometimes it's, you know, it's like a maturity that settles in. But the third phase is when you actually are no longer a beginner, but are an initiate who has graduated to spiritual man. And this is an inner life that develops. And in the old schools, this was the firstborn, this is the born again, and then this is the thrice born. And the firstborn is the rose of the world. It's simply a person who is traveling through life and living ordinary life, maturing. It's what Jung would call maturation. It's within the biological and social and cultural limits of our species. And we lead many of those lives, if you believe in reincarnation. You have to lead many of those lives just learning how to operate on this particular planet or environment. There is a point, though, where you become aware of that other aspect, the rose within, and that's where you make a decision. And this is a decision. to pass through the door. And you are then born again. And you no longer wander. This is a series of self-appointed lessons and tests. It's a long period where you re-examine over and over whether this is the right thing for you to be doing. And then there is this magical moment, and it's a moment that is recognized both by you and perhaps your teachers or your inner figures, where you're no longer a student or an initiate. And you simply are passing through a third death and birth. And there are three requirements of spiritual man. One is that they contact and stay in communion with the daemon, or the, you know, in some of the schools they call it the higher self. Yeats would just call it the soul. So you live more in the rose than you do in your physical form. And the second is a very hard initiation. Each of these phases you can say is an initiation, because we're always beginning new things. This one is called, in Kabbalistic terms, it's the Sephiroth of Geburah. It's a Mars-related initiation. And the requirement is that you are able to view all of life without rancor or attachment. And this is where you really get tested on your ability to interfere not. This is where you really get tested on have you conquered fear? Have you conquered your anger so that it doesn't entangle you unnecessarily? Because by this time in your path, you know some things that you want to do, what you desire to do. And imagine that every time you get involved in an emotional entanglement that is very derailing, you aren't doing what it is you wanted to do. So this is a very difficult requirement, which is the non-interference. And the third requirement is the part where I think a lot of people really feel the responsibility of initiation practices, but it's described as the exemptus magus, exempt from the chaos of life. Not exempt because you've attained anything, but exempt because you count yourself out of chaos. You do not involve yourself any longer in chaos. And you do that for one reason, and the reason is to instruct by example that there is a door out of confusion, delusion, and chaos. You make your life such a life. If the existentialists were here, they would say, you make your choices so that if another man or woman chose to live like you, no harm would come. So it's a stage of this initiate's path that you become extremely self-conscious about the choices you've made and how you live and what you're doing with your life. And this inner initiation is very hard. Well, creative process probably involves chaos. And usually when the ideas come in or the images come in, there's a tumble of it, right? And that's exciting. Right. But if you're going to bring it to its full perfection or potential, you have to start eliminating certain aspects, choosing, containing it. And so you bring it from chaos into a semblance of order, whatever your definition of order is. That's the creative process. But I am sure you know people who live from crisis to crisis and attempt to pull you into it as well. And just as soon as they get the life kind of smooth, pretty soon there's another crisis. And after a while, you begin to realize that that is their life. And someone was talking this morning about it in terms of having to set some hard limits if we go this route. We're going to have to say to people, I don't think I can be involved with this. I've got to not watch your pain. It's not easy for me to watch your pain, and so I choose not to watch your pain. I can give examples even in career development. In my early 30s, I worked in women's centers and in clinics. And in the women's center, we had a time limit. We could only see people 3 sessions. And in the clinics, we basically were doing patch-up work and crisis intervention. And what that does after 3 or 4 years is my life was a crisis. I mean, it's like, that's my life. Going to bed, getting up, dealing with all that. It's very stressful. And it makes a very jaundiced view of life. You think all of life is like that. And as I began to have to make hard choices about what direction I wanted to go, I began to realize that I needed a job change because I couldn't do Jungian training and continue to work in a crisis clinic. It was not compatible. And there was no possible outcome for any of that. It was simply putting fires out. And Jungian work is about process. It's not about putting fires out. So I had to say no to all the chaos that would be in the way of my understanding of what this individuation process would be. So these are the choices. I mean, it's a dance between you and the environment, continually looking at, is this my chaos or is this an environmental chaos? Is this a necessity or is this something that I could contain? And it is hard work because it means setting limits and it means probably eliminating a lot of things. Then you look at your own habits. I mean, one of the things you have to look at is how you keep yourself in chaos, internally or otherwise. I can think of people who don't get enough sleep. They arrange too many things in a day. And they're running on half empty all the time. They're just out, burned out. But they don't know how to stop. Well, they have to make a commitment to stop. They can't say, I am burned out, and then go on 6 more months working 18-hour days. To back off of the things that are unhealthy for us by our choice is an act of will. And that is what a lot of this kind of work requires. So when we start talking about hearing the vocation, then this step of the work requires you to decide how important that is and then make the choices that would support that change. Now, if you've decided that the vocation is, let's say in my case, being relaxed enough to get whatever poetry will come, knowing full well that that is not for money or fame or even for anyone, it's just that it wants to be written, then I have to get enough sleep. I have to have certain privacy and silence. My rule of thumb is 12 hours. I like about 12 hours by myself of silence a day. And if I can't get that at certain parts of the day, then I go from 9:30 at night to 9:30 in the morning. And that means nobody there except the cat. But it's a rule. I mean, I have to do that for this other work that may or may not ever be more than what it is now. I mean, that's just the chance I take. To do that kind of work, there are certain kinds of activities that are out. Drinking too much. Eating weird things that give me a bad night's sleep. I mean, it's a weird kind of choice that has to be made. But that's what I choose to do. To work with the clients I really love, I cannot have a client who upsets me to the point where I am obsessed with the containment of that person. So if someone comes into my practice that is unable to self-contain and self-direct between sessions, I really have to refer them for the sake of everyone else that I'm working with. I cannot give everything to one and one-tenth to the rest. That is not fair. I will not do that. So these are the things, and I live by these three little rules. I mean, it's like a life gets pretty simple, and it also gets very difficult because there are times when I don't want to do it. I really don't want to do it. I'd rather let it slide for a month, or I'd rather just get all involved in my family and, you know, get all involved in my sister's life and tell her how to run her life and, you know, the interference part, or get overextended with whatever friends are doing, or the busybody, you know. So these are the three steps. And I think what I'd like you to do is we'll do a brief contact with each. What time is it? We'll go as we go. What time have we got? 3:15. Okay. How about a short break so that the one was enough.
This is a back door.
This is not a back door. This is another door. This is for those of you who choose to be thrice born. And thrice born. And what that requires of you is a dedication to living in contact with your highest communion, learning to live a life of non-interference, and living by example. And the first meditation will be to contact the higher self, the higher daemon, your best voice, the one who can help you, teach you. You'll never be alone again, ever, when you get this voice. And this is Yeats in December of 1915. Because I seek an image, not a book, those men that in their writings are most wise own nothing but their blind, stupefied hearts. I call to the mysterious one, who yet shall walk the wet sands by the edge of the stream, and look most like me, being indeed my double, and prove of all imaginal things the most unlike, being my anti-self. And standing by these characters, disclose all that I seek, and whisper it as though he were afraid the birds who cry aloud their momentary cries before it is dawn would carry it away to blasphemous men. All right. You're going to contact your daemon, who looks exactly like you, but is in fact your opposite. And when you stand in the world, you're afraid, in fact, that he's going to disclose all that you seek. But in fact, he whispers to you as though he is afraid even the birds will carry it away to blasphemous men. So this is a silent partner. And it's also urging you to protect your information while you're nurturing it and preparing what it is you are working on.
Mm-hmm. I'm not understanding the word daemon. Is that demon?
Daimon. It's a Greek word for teacher or guide, inner figure, muse, higher self. But this is the part of you that, when you have communion with it, you feel your intuition works like that, or you get a knowing, or there are people who actually get a voice. You can contact this inner figure in meditation. You can set a certain condition before sleep if you need information about a project. But it's like, trying to think of the name of the man who wrote the Tarot book I like so well. The little green book. Paul Foster Case wrote a book on the Rosicrucian, what's it called, Tarot? Is it the Rosicrucian? Can't think of that. I can't think today. We're not thinking today. Paul Foster Case talked about the still small voice that was with him always. Yeats called it his anti-self, his other self. I have always called it my dream voice because it's more likely to contact me in dreams. Other people have seen it almost only as a second skin. It's like all of a sudden you feel like you're being given a shroud of protection or information or knowing. But maybe you already have this, and this will be easy for you. How many do have this? Okay. You're close. Okay. Comes and goes. All right. What we're going to do today is a double door, and I think that that often has helped me. It's like the natural door is one way to get that movement and move past a lot of things. And what we'll do today is use the second door, the one that Yeats went through, that was it's really an initiate's door that has maybe a gold emblem. For me, it was that gold rose. It may be something entirely different for you, but it is a door within a door, an inner door, and it's for the protective value of that inner voice where you need the double seclusion. And we're going to change the music. This will be more spacey and closer to the anima mundi. Nope. We'll go to the forest, the glade, and contact the circle of trees. And move into the stone circle. and be in the light, the column or shaft of light, and expand the rose on several breaths. Find your door and catch the movement when you open the door. Do not allow anything to distract you from your purpose. And move swiftly toward a second door. This is an artful door. It has signs and symbols known only to you. And notice what you are wearing in your rose body. And notice how you are feeling in your rose body. And reach forward and go through the second door. Where you will encounter your daemon. Teacher, other self. And simply spend some time getting to know one another. If there are questions you wish to ask those questions and listen for the way the answer comes. And see if this being wishes you to contact on a regular basis, what time of day, what conditions, whether it be sleep or dreams, do you have a signal that you can give that you need information or help, a symbol, a contact. And say goodbye briefly. And capture as much of the essence as you can. Move into the stone circle and fill your body with rose breath. And very quickly move through the first door and let your feet have wings and move you very quickly to the second door. And fill your body with rose breath. And move quickly through the second door. And look around you. What kind of room is this? Clearer about the instructions, or ask a question about your work, or ask for an image that wants to be brought back into this world. A metaphor for poetry. Or one line to be added to a work in progress, or the colors for a painting, or the lyrics for a song you're writing, or new ingredients for something you're cooking. Anything you like. Is there something you'd like to see? Or a friend you'd like to check in on? Do what you want.